This is Audible.
A long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away. Random House Audio presents Star Wars, The Old Republic. Revan, by Drew Karpyshyn. Read for you by Mark Thompson. Prologue. Here, the darkness reigns eternal. There is no sun, no dawn. Just the perpetual gloom of night. The only illumination comes from jagged forks of lightning, carving a wicked path through angry clouds. In their savage wake, thunder shreds the sky, unleashing a torrent of hard, cold rain. The storm is coming, and there is no escape. Revan's eyes snapped open, the primal fury of his nightmare wrenching him awake for the third night in a row. He lay still and quiet, turning his focus inward to ease the pounding of his heart as he silently recited the opening line of the Jedi mantra. There is no emotion. There is peace. A sense of calm settled over him, washing away the irrational terror of his dream. Yet he knew better than to merely dismiss it. The storm that haunted him each time he closed his eyes was more than just a nightmare. Conjured up from the deepest corners of his mind, the storm had meaning. But try as he might, Revan couldn't figure out what his subconscious was trying to tell him. Was it a warning? A long-forgotten memory? A vision of the future? All three? Careful not to wake his wife, he rolled out of bed and went into the refresher to splash some cool water on his face. Catching a glimpse of himself in the mirror, he stopped to study his reflection. Even now, 2 standard years after rediscovering his true identity, he still had trouble reconciling the face in the mirror with the man he had been before the Jedi Council had turned him back to the light. Revan, Jedi, hero. Traitor, conqueror, villain, savior. He was all these things and more. He was a living legend, the embodiment of myth and folklore, a figure that transcended history. Yet all he saw staring back at him was an ordinary man who hadn't slept in 3 nights. Fatigue was taking its toll. His angular features had become thin and drawn. His pale skin accentuated the dark circles under eyes that stared back at him from deep hollows. Bracing a hand on either side of the sink, he slumped his head and let out a long, low sigh. His black, shoulder-length hair falling forward to cover his face like a dark curtain. After several seconds, he stood up straight, using the fingers of both hands to sweep his hair back into place. Moving quietly, he made his way from the refresher and across the small living room of his apartment. He proceeded out onto the balcony, where he stopped and stared out across Coruscant's endless cityscape. Traffic in the galactic capital never stopped, and he found the constant buzz and blur of shuttles speeding by soothing. He leaned out over the railing of the balcony as far as he could, his eyes unable to pierce the darkness to make out the planet's surface hundreds of stories below.
"Don't jump. I don't want to have to clean up the mess."
He turned his head at the sound of Bastila's voice behind him. She stood at the threshold of the balcony door, the bedsheet draped around her shoulders to ward off the night's chill. Her long brown hair, normally pulled back up from her forehead into a bun on top and a short ponytail below, hung loose and sleep-tousled. Her face was only partially illuminated by the glow of the city below, yet he could see her lips pressed into a wry smile. Despite her joking words, he could see real concern etched on her features. "Sorry," he said, stepping away from the rail and turning toward her. "Didn't mean to wake you. Just needed to clear my head."
"Maybe you should speak to the Jedi Council," Bastila suggested. "They might be able to help."
"You want me to ask the Council for help?" he echoed. "You must have had too much of the Corellian wine at dinner."
"They owe you," Bastila insisted. "If it weren't for you, Darth Malak would have destroyed the Republic, eliminated the Council, and all but wiped out the Jedi. They owe you everything."
Revan didn't answer right away. What she said was true. He had stopped Darth Malak and destroyed the Starforge. But it wasn't that simple. Malak had been Revan's apprentice. Against the wishes of the Council, the two had led an army of Jedi and Republic soldiers against Mandalorian raiders threatening colonies in the Outer Rim, only to return not as heroes, but as conquerors. Revan and Malak had both sought to destroy the Republic, but Malak had betrayed his master, and Revan had been captured by the Jedi Council, barely alive, his body and mind shattered. The Council had saved his life, but they had also stripped his memories and rebuilt him as a weapon that could be unleashed against Darth Malak and his followers.
"The Council doesn't owe me anything," Revan whispered. "All the good I've done can't balance out the evil that came before."
Bastila brought her hand up and put it gently but firmly over Revan's lips.
"Don't talk like that. They can't blame you for what happened. Not anymore. You're not the same man you were. The Revan I know is a hero, a champion of the light. You redeemed me after Malak turned me to the dark side."
Revan reached up and wrapped his fingers around the delicate hand resting on his lips, then softly pulled it down.
"Like you and the Council redeemed me."
Bastila turned away, and Revan instantly regretted his words. He knew she was ashamed of her involvement in his capture and her role in erasing his memory.
"What we did was wrong. At the time, I thought we had no other choice, but if I had to do it over again, I..."
"No," Revan said, cutting her off. "I wouldn't want you to change anything. If none of this had happened, I might never have found you."
She turned back to face him, and he could see the hurt and bitterness lingering in her eyes.
"What the Council did to you wasn't right," she insisted. "They took away your memories. They stole your identity."
"It came back," Revan assured her, pulling her close and wrapping his arms around her. "You have to let go of your anger."
She didn't fight his embrace, though she stood rigid at first. Then he felt the tension melting away from her body as she lowered her head onto his shoulder.
"There is no emotion. There is peace,"
she whispered, reciting aloud the same words Revan had sought solace in only a few minutes earlier. They stood there in silence, holding each other until Revan felt her shiver.
"It's cold out here," he said. "We should go back inside."
20 minutes later, Bastila was fast asleep. But Revan lay on the bed with his eyes open, staring at the ceiling. He was thinking about what Bastila had said about the Council taking his identity. As his mind had healed, many of his memories had returned, along with his sense of self. But he knew parts were still missing, possibly gone forever. As a Jedi, he knew the importance of letting go of bitterness and anger. But that didn't mean he couldn't still wonder about what he had lost. Something had happened to him and Malak beyond the Outer Rim. They had gone to defeat the Mandalorians, but they had returned as disciples of the dark side. The official story was they had been corrupted by the ancient power of the Starforge. But Revan suspected there was more to it, and he knew it had something to do with his nightmares. A terrible world of thunder and lightning, shrouded in perpetual night. He and Malak had found something. He couldn't remember what it was or where it was, but he feared it on a deep, primal level. Somehow, he knew that whatever the terrible secret might be, it was a threat far greater than the Mandalorians or the Starforge. And Revan was convinced it was still out there.
The storm is coming, and there is no escape.
Part 1. Chapter 1. Lord Scourge raised the hood of his cloak as he stepped off the shuttle, a shield against the wind and pelting rain. Storms were common here on Drummond Kos. Dark clouds perpetually blocked out the sun, rendering terms like day and night meaningless. The only natural illumination came from the frequent bursts of lightning arcing across the sky. But the glow from the spaceport and nearby Kos City provided more than enough light to see where he was going. The powerful electrical storms were a physical manifestation of the dark side power that engulfed the entire planet. A power that had brought the Sith back here a millennium before, when their very survival had been in doubt. After a crushing defeat in the Great Hyperspace War, the Emperor had risen up from the tattered ranks of the remaining Sith Lords to lead his followers on a desperate exodus to the farthest reaches of the galaxy. Fleeing the Republic armies and the relentless revenge of the Jedi, they eventually resettled far beyond the borders of Republic-charted space on their long-lost ancestral homeworld. There, safely hidden from their enemies, the Sith began to rebuild their empire. Under the guidance of the Emperor, the immortal and all-powerful Savior who still reigned over them even after 1,000 years, they abandoned the hedonistic lifestyles of their barbaric ancestors. Instead, they created a near-perfect society in which the Imperial military operated and controlled virtually every aspect of daily life. Farmers, mechanics, teachers, cooks, janitors, all were part of the great martial machine. Each individual cog trained to perform his or her duties with maximum discipline and efficiency. As a result, the Sith had been able to conquer and enslave world after world in the unexplored regions of the galaxy until their power and influence rivaled those of their glorious past. Another burst of lightning split the sky, momentarily illuminating the massive citadel that loomed over Kos City. Built by slaves and devoted followers, the citadel served as both palace and fortress, an unassailable meeting place for the Emperor and the 12 hand-picked Sith Lords who made up his dark council. A decade earlier, when Scourge had first arrived on Drummond Kos as a young apprentice, he had vowed to one day set foot inside the citadel's exclusive halls. Yet in all his years of training at the Sith Academy on Kos City's borders, he had never been granted the privilege. He had been one of the top students, marked by his superiors for his strength in the Force and his fanatic devotion to the ways of the Sith. But acolytes were not permitted inside the Citadel. Its secrets were reserved for those in direct service to the Emperor and the Dark Council. The dark side power emanating from within the building was undeniable. He had felt the raw, crackling energy every day during his years as an acolyte. He had drawn on it, focusing his mind and spirit to channel the power through his own body to sustain him during the brutal training sessions. Now, after almost 2 years away, he was back on Drummond Kos. Standing on the landing pad, he could once again feel the dark side deep inside his bones. The sizzling heat more than compensating for the minor discomfort of the wind and rain. But he was no longer a mere apprentice. Scourge had returned to the seat of Imperial power as a full-fledged Sith Lord. He had known this day would come eventually. After graduating from the Sith Academy, he had hoped for a posting on Drummond Kos. Instead, he had been sent to the fringes of the Empire to help quell a series of minor rebellions on recently conquered worlds. Scourge suspected the posting had been a punishment of some type. One of his instructors, jealous of the star pupil's potential, had probably recommended that he be stationed as far from the seat of Imperial power as possible to slow his ascent to the upper ranks of Sith society. Unfortunately, Scourge had no proof to back his theory. Yet even exiled to the uncivilized sectors on the farthest borders of the Empire, he had still managed to forge his reputation. His martial skills and ruthless pursuit of the rebel leaders caught the notice of several prominent military leaders. Now, 2 years after leaving the Academy, he had returned to Dromund Kaas as a newly anointed Lord of the Sith. More important, he was here at the personal request of Darth Nihriss, one of the most senior members of the Emperor's Dark Council.
Lord Scourge!
A figure called out over the wind, running up to greet him.
I am Setchu. Welcome to Dromund Kaas.
Welcome back,
Scourge corrected, as the man dropped to one knee and bowed his head in a gesture of respect.
This is not my first time on this world.
Setchel's hood was pulled up against the rain, covering his features. But during his approach, Scourge had noticed the red skin and dangling cheek tendrils that marked him as a pure-blood Sith, just like Lord Scourge himself. But while Scourge was an imposing figure, tall and broad-shouldered, this man was small and slight. Reaching out, Scourge sensed only the faintest hint of a force in the other, and his features twisted into a sneer of revulsion. Unlike the humans that made up the bulk of the Empire's population, the Sith species were all blessed with the power of the Force to varying degrees. It marked them as the elite. It elevated them above the lower ranks of Imperial society, and it was a legacy that was fervently protected. A pureblood born without any connection to the Force was an abomination. By custom, such a creature could not be suffered to live. During his time at the Academy, Lord Scourge had encountered a handful of Sith whose power in the Force was noticeably weak. Hampered by their failing, they relied on the influence of their high-ranking families to find them postings as low-level aides or administrative officials at the Academy, where their handicap would be least noticed. Spared from the lower castes only by their pure-blood heritage, in Scourge's eyes, they were barely better than slaves. Though he did have to admit that the more competent ones could have their uses. But never before had he encountered one of his own kind with as feeble an attunement to the Force as the man huddled at his feet. The fact that Darth Nihriss had sent someone so vile and unworthy to greet him was unsettling. He'd expected a more substantial and impressive welcome.
Get up,
he snarled, making no effort to conceal his disgust. Setchel quickly scrambled to his feet.
Darth Nihriss sends her apologies for not coming to meet you personally,
he said quickly.
There have been several attempts on her life recently, and she only leaves her palace under the rarest of circumstances.
I'm well aware of her situation,
Scourge replied.
Yes, my lord,
Setchel stammered.
Of course, that's why you're here. Excuse my stupidity.
A crash of thunder nearly drowned out Setchel's apology, heralding an increase in the storm's intensity. The driving rain started to come down in stinging sheets.
Were your master's instructions to leave me standing here in this downpour until I drowned?
Scourge demanded.
Forgive me, my lord. Please, follow me. We have a speeder waiting to take you to the domicile.
A short distance from the spaceport was a small landing pad. A constant stream of hovercabs was landing and taking off, the preferred way for those of the lower ranks who couldn't afford their own speeder to traverse the city. As was typical at a busy spaceport, a thick crowd surrounded the base of the landing pad. Those just arriving quickly fell into the queues waiting to hire a driver, moving with the disciplined precision that was a hallmark of Imperial society. Of course, Lord Scourge had no need to step into the line. While some of the crowd cast sharp glances at Setchel as he tried to force a pass through, the throng quickly parted upon catching sight of the towering figure behind him. Even with his hood drawn against the rain, Scourge's black cape, his spiked armor, his dark red complexion, and the lightsaber prominently displayed at his side clearly marked him as a Sith Lord. The individuals in the crowd showed a wide variety of reactions to his presence. Many were slaves or indentured servants out running errands for their masters. They wisely kept their eyes fixed on the ground, careful not to make eye contact. The enlisted, the ranks of ordinary individuals conscripted into mandatory military service, snapped smartly to attention, as if waiting for Scourge to inspect them as he passed by. The subjugates, the caste of off-world merchants, traders, dignitaries, and visitors from planets not yet granted full status in the Empire, stared with a mixture of wonder and fear as they stepped quickly aside. Many of them bowed as a sign of respect. On their homeworlds, they might be rich and powerful, but here on Dromund Kaas, they were well aware that they ranked only slightly above the servants and slaves. The only exception to the rule was a pair of humans, one male, the other female. Scourge noticed them standing at the foot of the stairs leading up to the landing pad, stubbornly holding their ground. They were wearing expensive clothes, matching red pants and tops trimmed with white, and both clearly wore light armor beneath their outfits. Dangling from the man's shoulder was a large assault rifle, and the woman had a blaster strapped across each hip. However, the two humans were clearly not part of the military, as neither displayed the official Imperial insignia or any indication of rank on their garb. It wasn't unusual for subjugate mercenaries from other worlds to visit Dromund Kaas. Some came seeking profit, hiring their services out to the highest bidder. Others came to prove their value to the Empire in the hope of one day being granted the rare privilege of full Imperial citizenship. But mercenaries typically reacted with deference and humility when confronted with someone of Scourge's rank. By law, Scourge could have them imprisoned or executed for even a trifling offense. Judging by their confrontational behavior, they were blissfully unaware of this fact. As the rest of the crowd parted, the mercenaries remained in place, staring defiantly at Scourge as he approached. The Sith Lord bristled at the continued lack of respect. Setchel must have felt it as well, because he quickly rushed ahead to confront the pair. Scourge didn't slow his pace, but neither did he make a move to catch up with the scurrying servant. At this distance, he couldn't hear what was being said over the wind and rain, but Setchel was speaking frantically, gesturing and waving his arms while the human stared at him with cold contempt. Finally, the woman nodded, and the pair slowly moved out of the way. Satisfied, Setchel turned and waited for Scourge to arrive.
"A thousand apologies, my lord," he said as they mounted the steps. "Some subjugates lack a proper understanding of our customs."
"Perhaps they need me to remind them of their place,"
Scourge growled.
"If that is your wish, my lord," Setchel said. "However, I must remind you that Darth Nihris is expecting you."
Scourge decided to let the matter drop. They climbed into the waiting speeder, Setchel at the controls. Scourge settled into the luxurious seat, pleased to note that the vehicle had a roof. Many of the hover cabs were open to the elements. The engines engaged, and they rose to a height of 10 meters before the speeder accelerated, leaving the spaceport behind. They rode in silence, drawing ever closer to the massive citadel that stood at the heart of Kaas City. But Scourge knew this was not their destination today. Like every member of the Dark Council, Darth Nihris was allowed access to the Emperor's citadel. In the wake of 2 recent assassination attempts, however, Scourge fully expected her to stay within the walls of the personal stronghold she maintained on the outskirts of Kaas City, surrounded by her most trusted staff and servants. This didn't strike Scourge as cowardly in any way. Nihris was simply being practical. Like any high-ranking Sith, she had many enemies. Until she discovered who was behind the assassination attempts, exposing herself unnecessarily was a foolish and unwarranted risk. Yet her practicality had to be balanced against the understanding that her rank was based solely on strength. If Nihris appeared weak or ineffective, if she was unable to take firm and decisive action against whoever was plotting her death. Others would sense it. Rivals, both off and on the Dark Council, would prey on her situation, leveraging her vulnerable position to their own advantage. Darth Nihrus would not be the first of the Emperor's inner circle to lose her life. That was why Scourge was here, to root out the secret masterminds behind the assassinations and destroy them. Given the importance of his mission, he couldn't understand why Nihrus hadn't sent a full honor guard to escort him through the city. She should want everyone to know of his arrival. He was proof that steps were being taken to solve her problem, a warning to any other rivals who might be emboldened by the recent attempts on her life. Keeping his arrival almost secret served no purpose. At least none Scourge could see. They passed by the Emperor's citadel and made their way to the western edge of the city. After several more minutes, Scourge felt the speeder begin to slow as Setchel brought it in for a landing.
"We're here, my lord,"
Setchel said as the vehicle touched down. They were in a large courtyard. High stone walls stood to the north and south. The east end was open to the street. The west was bordered by what Scourge assumed was Darth Nihrus's stronghold. In many ways, the building resembled the Emperor's citadel, though on a significantly smaller scale. The architectural similarities were more than just an homage to the Emperor. Like his citadel, this building would serve both as Nihrus's dwelling and as a fortress she could fall back to in times of trouble. And it had been designed to be simultaneously ornate, imposing, and easily defensible. The courtyard itself was populated by half a dozen large statues, each several meters wide at the base, and easily twice as tall as Scourge. The two largest depicted humanoids in Sith robes, a male and a female. They stood with their arms raised slightly forward, their hands palms up. The man's face was hidden by a hood, the common depiction of the Emperor. The woman had her hood thrown back to reveal fierce Sith features. If the sculptor's work was accurate, Scourge knew this was his first glimpse of what Darth Nihrus actually looked like. The other statues were abstract pieces, though each incorporated Nihrus's household emblem, a four-pointed star inside a wide circle. The ground was covered with fine white pebbles. A rare type of lichen that thrived in the gloom of Dromund Kaas had been planted in decorative patterns throughout the stone, the faint purple glow providing a ghostly illumination. A smooth path of finished stone led from the massive double doors that marked the entrance of the stronghold through the center of the courtyard and out to the small landing pad where their speeder had touched down. Setchel scrambled out of the vehicle and raced around to open the exit hatch on the other side for his passenger. Scourge stepped out of the speeder and into the rain, which had lessened only slightly during their journey.
"This way, my lord,"
Setchel said, heading down the path. Scourge followed him, fully expecting the doors to swing wide at their approach. To his surprise, the entrance remained sealed. Setchel didn't seem taken aback, however. Instead, he turned to the small holo screen on the side and pressed the call button. A flickering image materialized on the holo screen, a human male of about 40. He appeared to be wearing the standard uniform of an Imperial security officer, and Scourge surmised he was the head of Nihrus's personal guard.
"Our guest has arrived, Murtaugh,"
Setchel explained, nodding in Scourge's direction.
"Did you verify his identity?"
Murtaugh asked.
"What are you talking about?"
Setchel stammered.
"How do we know this is the real Lord Scourge? How do we know this isn't another assassin?"
The question seemed to catch Setchel completely off guard.
I mean, he seems to be... That is...
"I'm not letting him in until I have proof."
Setchel glanced back over his shoulder at Lord Scourge, his expression a mix of humiliation and fear. Then he leaned in close to the holocom and, in a low voice, said,
"This is completely inappropriate. You've overstepped your authority."
I'm the security chief,
Murtaugh reminded him.
This is completely within my authority. Just give me 5 minutes to confirm everything's on the up and up.
Scourge stepped forward, grabbing Setchell by the shoulder and yanking him aside.
You dare insult me by making me wait out in the rain like some beggar?
He spat at the screen.
I am a guest. Darth Nyriss herself invited me.
Murtaugh barked out a sharp laugh.
You might want to check your facts on that.
The holoscreen clicked off abruptly. Scourge turned around to find Setchell cowering against the wall.
I'm sorry, my lord,
he said.
Murtaugh has become somewhat paranoid since...
Scourge cut him off.
What did he mean when he told me to check my facts? Was I invited by Darth Nyriss or not?
You were. Of course you were. Sort of.
Scourge raised his hand towards Setchell and reached out to the Force.
The servant began to gasp and clutch at his throat as his body was lifted slowly up into the air by an invisible hand.
You will tell me what is going on,
Scourge said, his voice devoid of all emotion.
You will tell me everything, or you will die. Do you understand?
Setchell tried to speak, but could only cough and sputter. Instead, he nodded frantically. Satisfied, Scourge released his hold. Abruptly, Setchell dropped the full meter to the ground, where he landed in a heap, grunting in pain before scrambling to his knees.
It wasn't Darth Nyriss' idea to hire you,
he explained, his voice still raw and rough from the choking.
After the second assassination attempt, the Emperor suggested that her own people could be involved. He suggested she bring someone in from the outside.
Suddenly it all made sense. The Emperor's will was absolute. A suggestion from him was a de facto order. Darth Nyriss had invited him here because she had no choice. Scourge had assumed he was an honored guest, but in actuality, he was nothing but an interloper. His presence was an insult to her loyal followers, and a reminder that the Emperor doubted her ability to deal with the assassins herself. That was why he'd received such a meager reception, and why Nyriss's security chief had reacted to him with such hostility. Scourge realized he was in a precarious situation. His efforts to investigate the assassinations would be met with resistance and suspicion. Any mistakes, even those that were not his fault, would be blamed on him. A single misstep could spell the end of his career, or even his life. He was still pondering this new information when he heard a speeder approaching through the storm. The sound was innocuous, but it instantly put his senses on high alert. His heart began beating rapidly, and his breathing quickened. A rush of adrenaline caused his cheek tendrils to twitch and his muscles to tense. He drew his lightsaber and glanced up at the sky. At his feet, Setchell cried out and covered his face, assuming the lightsaber was meant for him.
Scourge ignored him.
In the darkness of the storm, he could just make out the speeder's silhouette heading straight for them. He reached out with the Force, probing the vehicle and its passengers. He felt a bolt of anger rip through him as his suspicions were confirmed. Whoever was in the speeder was coming to kill him. All of this, from Scourge's first awareness of the speeder to confirmation of its hostile intent, took less than 2 seconds. Time enough for the speeder to close the distance and come bearing down on him. Scourge leapt to the side as a barrage of blaster fire was unleashed from the vehicle. He hit the ground in a roll that brought him to his feet just in time to spring clear of a second series of bolts. Moving with the blinding speed of the Force, he raced across the courtyard, bolts ricocheting off the ground just behind him every step of the way. He dived behind the cover of the Emperor's statue, his mind assessing the situation. The speeder had to be equipped with an auto-targeting blaster cannon. There was no other way the shots could have tracked him so closely on his desperate run for cover. Even a Sith Lord couldn't evade that kind of firepower forever. He had to disable the vehicle. The speeder was heading away from him, circling around for another strafing run. Before it could complete its turn, Scourge stepped out from behind the statue and launched his lightsaber across the courtyard. The crimson blade went spiraling through the night, tracing a wide, looping arc. It clipped the back end of the speeder, sending up a shower of spark and flame, and continued on its trajectory to return to Scourge's outstretched hand. The hum of the speeder's engine pitched into a screaming whine as it completed its turn. Black smoke, barely visible against the dark clouds, billowed out from the rear engine. The vehicle began to lurch and wobble, losing altitude rapidly, even as it opened fire yet again. Scourge ducked back behind the Emperor's statue, pressing his back firmly against it as a shower of bolts rained down on him. A second later, the speeder flew overhead, its angle of attack dropping so steeply it actually decapitated the statue he was hiding behind. The heavy stone head toppled down toward him, forcing Scourge to break cover to avoid being crushed. At the same time, he saw the speeder slam into the ground. Emergency repulsor fields absorbed the impact, saving the vehicle from being smashed to bits, but it still hit hard enough to send a piece of the damaged engine flying. Holding his lightsaber high above his head with both hands, Scourge charged the downed speeder. Two passengers scrambled from the wreckage, shaken but unharmed. Scourge was only mildly surprised to recognize the two red-clothed mercenaries he'd encountered on the speeder pad back near the spaceport. The male was on the far side of the speeder, struggling to get his blaster rifle out of the wreckage. The female was on the near side, her blaster pistols already drawn. Scourge was less than 5 meters away when she opened fire. He didn't bother trying to block the bolts. Instead, he launched himself upward, his forward momentum carrying him in a high, somersaulting leap that arced over both the woman and the damaged speeder. The sudden move caught her off guard, and though she fired several hurried shots, none hit him. Twisting 180 degrees as he flew through the air, he landed on the other side of the speeder, right beside the male mercenary, just as the man was bringing his own weapon to bear. Before he could fire, Scourge slashed his lightsaber diagonally across his enemy's torso. As the man's corpse toppled to the ground, Scourge turned his attention back to the first mercenary. By this time, she had spun to face him, and as her partner went down, she unloaded another series of shots, forcing Scourge to duck behind the speeder for cover. This time, several of her blasts found their mark. Scourge's armor absorbed the worst of the attack, but he felt a searing pain in his shoulder as a small amount of the particle beam energy found its way through a joint in his armor to scorch his flesh. He focused on the pain, transforming it into anger to fuel the force for a savage counterattack. At the same time, instinctively, he drew upon his opponent's fear, adding it to his own passion and further amplifying the power he was gathering. Channeling his rage, he unleashed a concentrated wave of energy that struck the woman square in the chest. The impact lifted her off her feet and sent her flying backward through the air. Her journey was cut short when she slammed against the base of one of the abstract statues. The sudden stop jarred the pistols from her hands, leaving her momentarily defenseless. Scourge placed one hand on the hood of the speeder and vaulted over it, rushing to close in on his prone foe before she could regain her footing. But the mercenary was quick. She scrambled to her feet and pulled out a short electro rod, its tip crackling with a charge potent enough to knock an opponent unconscious with even a grazing blow. Scourge pulled up short. The mercenary dropped into a fighting crouch, and the two combatants circled each other warily. Had he wanted to, Scourge could have ended the encounter right then and there. Without her pistols, electro rod or not, the mercenary had no chance against a Sith Lord with a lightsaber. But killing her wouldn't get him what he really wanted.
"Tell me who hired you, and I'll let you live," he said.
"Do I look that stupid?" she countered,
fainting and making a quick lunge that Scourge easily sidestepped.
"You're obviously skilled," he told her. "I can use someone like you. Tell me who hired you, and I'll let you work for me. That or throw your life away."
She hesitated, and for an instant, Scourge thought she might drop her weapon. And then, the night was shattered by the sound of multiple blaster carbines. The bolts hammered the mercenary in the back, sending her stumbling toward Scourge. He saw a look of total bewilderment on her face as she sank to her knees. Her mouth moved, but no words came out. Then she fell face down in the gravel, dead. Turning, Scourge saw half a dozen guards standing in the courtyard near the door leading into the stronghold. Among them was a human wearing a commander's uniform. He was short, broad-shouldered, and barrel-chested, with close-cropped blonde hair and a neatly trimmed blonde beard that contrasted sharply with his dark brown skin. Scourge recognized him from the hollow. Murtaugh, Darth Nihrus's head of security. Before Scourge could say anything, Setchel exclaimed,
"About time you got here!"
He was still cowering against the wall, in nearly the exact place Scourge had left him after the brief interrogation that had preceded the ambush.
"Get up!"
Murtaugh told him, and the Sith lackey did as ordered.
"Clean this mess up!"
Murtaugh snapped at his guards, who scrambled to obey. Satisfied, the security chief slung his weapon over his shoulder and nodded in Scourge's direction.
"Darth Nihrus will see you now."
Chapter 2. As Murtaugh led the way through the halls of the stronghold, Lord Scourge did his best to ignore the pain radiating from his wounded shoulder. Instead, he focused on his surroundings, hoping to learn more of Lord Nihrus before they came face to face. The interior architecture was typical of Sith aristocracy, a series of long, wide corridors with thick stone walls, vaulted ceilings, and countless imposing steel doors, all closed to conceal the rooms behind them. The halls were lavishly decorated in bold colors, red, black, and purple. Expensive woven rugs covered the floors, and the walls were lined with a collection of pictures, sculptures, and holoprojections worthy of any museum. Murtaugh set a quick pace, giving Scourge little time to study the works. However, Setchel, trailing a few steps behind, provided a running commentary on significant pieces as they marched past.
"This is a bust of the infamous warlord Ugroth. He swore fealty to Darth Nihrus a dozen years ago when she led an imperial force into a sector to subdue a potential uprising. This holoprojection was a gift from Queen Ressa of Drezi to thank Darth Nihrus for her merciful treatment of the royal family when the Empire conquered their world. Her husband was executed, but the Queen and her children were spared. This portrait commemorates Darth Nihrus's victory during..."
Realizing he wasn't going to gain any real insight from Setchel's descriptions, Scourge tuned him out. Still, he understood and appreciated the overt display of opulence. Nihrus was a member of the Dark Council. She was one of the 12 most important and influential individuals in the Empire. The material treasures were a symbol of her own worth, a reminder to any visitors that she was a being of rank and power. Numerous sentries stood guard throughout the halls. They nodded in acknowledgement as Murtaugh passed. Such a high number of guards stationed inside the stronghold was a bit atypical, but considering the recent assassination attempts, it wasn't unexpected. Scourge wondered if Murtaugh would increase their numbers given the most recent incident, though Scourge wasn't convinced it had actually been an assassination attempt. The dark side fed on passion and raw emotion, but it was important to temper it with cold analysis and reason. Even as he marched to meet his new liege, Scourge's mind was trying to piece together the parts of a puzzle that didn't seem to fit. The alleged assassins had struck in the courtyard, exposing their presence while still outside the secured walls and gates of the stronghold. Even if Scourge hadn't stopped them, there was no chance they could actually have gotten inside the building to strike at Nihrus, which probably meant she wasn't their real target. He was. But who had set him up? And why? Murtaugh seemed a likely candidate. Though only a human, he had risen to a prominent rank in Nihrus's service, a position almost on par with Scourge's own newly appointed status.
The first lesson Scourge had learned during his time at the Academy was that your peers could be your most dangerous rivals, Force users or not. And Murtaugh had every reason to feel threatened. He had failed to find those behind the assassination attempts on his liege. Scourge's arrival was a direct challenge to his competence as security chief. What better way to eliminate a potential rival than to expose his incompetence by killing him in a staged assassination attempt? That could explain why Murtaugh refused to let Scourge in when they'd first arrived, and why Murtaugh's soldiers had killed the female mercenary just when she'd been on the verge of surrendering. However, Murtaugh wasn't Scourge's only suspect. Setchel had similar self-preserving motives. If Scourge succeeded in his mission, he would likely be rewarded with a permanent position that would surely rank above the servile Sith advisor in Darth Nihrus's hierarchy. Setchel had managed to find himself a niche in Sith society by clinging to his role as an advisor to Nihrus. It made sense to assume he would do anything in his power to remove an individual he viewed as a threat to his own position of power. Scourge had witnessed Setchel speaking to the mercenaries at the spaceport earlier. At the time, it had seemed he was shooing them away out of respect for a high-ranking Sith Lord newly arrived on the planet. Now, Scourge wondered if he had been giving them last-minute instructions. The fact that Setchel had survived the battle in the courtyard was also suspicious. It was possible he was just lucky or had the highly evolved survival skills of a true coward. But it was also possible the mercenaries had been careful not to fire anywhere near him. Murtaugh rounded another corner. The pain in Scourge's shoulder was becoming more intense as his armor rubbed against the wounded flesh. Yet he kept pace with the stocky human, refusing to show any sign of weakness. The hall came to a dead end against another imposing door. This one, closed like all the others, was flanked by Sith apprentices. He doubted Nihrus would have made the Sith answer directly to a human, so they were probably not under Murtaugh's direct command. But based on the fact that they made no move to challenge the security chief as he approached, it was clear to Scourge that Murtaugh enjoyed a privileged position in Nihrus's household. Murtaugh stepped forward and rapped his knuckles gently on the door, then took a step back and stood at attention. While they waited for an answer to the knock, Scourge realized there was a third possibility. Murtaugh and Setchel might have been working together to plan the attack in the courtyard. At the Academy, lesser students would sometimes conspire together to bring down a more talented individual. It wasn't hard to imagine the same kind of thing happening outside the facility's walls as well. For the moment, it wasn't possible to know which of his theories, if any, was correct. But Scourge knew he'd have to watch his back. The door opened to reveal a young Twi'lek. She was clad in black robes, with Nihrus's four-pointed star emblazoned in purple on both the chest and back, surrounded by a red circle. A shock collar was fastened securely around her neck. But even without it, her status would have been immediately obvious, simply because of her species. When Sith had fallen into full retreat during the last days of the Great Hyperspace War, they had taken with them a number of prisoners captured during their early victories over Republic worlds. Those prisoners, mostly humans and Twi'leks, had been condemned to a life of slavery. By the Emperor's order, no slave could ever be granted his or her freedom, and the status of the parent would be passed down to the child, generation after generation. Because of this directive, there was never any doubt about the role of any Twi'lek in the Empire. They were and always would be slaves, descended from ancestors too weak to save themselves from the Sith invaders. The slave bent to one knee and kept her eyes to the ground as Murtaugh, Scourge, and Setchel stepped through. Then she closed the door behind them and retreated into a corner. The well-lit room appeared to be a study or a private library. The walls were lined with shelves, their ancient wooden frames warped by the weight of the treasures they bore. Scourge couldn't help but stare in wonder at the collection. During his days at the Academy, he had seen only one physical manuscript, an ancient tome dating back more than 10,000 years to the arrival of the first Dark Jedi on Dromund Kaas. The book was considered a priceless artifact, one of the Academy's greatest treasures. Yet here, dozens, if not hundreds, of volumes filled the shelves on the left wall. Most of the books were large and thick, their bound pages protected by covers of leather or some similarly cured hide, though Scourge guessed that not all of them were made from skin cured from mindless beasts. They had an antiquated look about them, though most appeared to be preserved in good condition, if somewhat worn from use. Obviously, Nyriss had paged through them many times. The shelves on the right wall contained reference material that looked even more ancient and delicate. Loose leaves of yellowed parchment were held in place with delicate wire clips. Rolled scrolls were encased in clear protective tubes. A hinged glass cover sheltered several books that looked as if they might crumble into dust should a strong breeze pass through the room. But not everything in the room was an archaic relic. On the rear wall was a large bank of holo disks and data cards, and in the center of the room was a computer workstation where a figure Scourge could only assume to be Darth Nyriss sat hunched, staring at the display monitor. The hood of her loose-fitting cowl, red, accented with purple and black, was pulled up over her head, and the long, loose sleeves even covered her hands and fingers as she worked at the terminal. Neither Murtaugh nor Setchel made any sound to announce their presence, so Scourge took his cue from them and stood silently, while Nyriss focused intently on the computer's display. Her cloaked form blocked any view of the screen, so it was impossible for him to see what she was studying. However, he thought he could hazard a guess. Darth Nyriss was well known for her proficiency in the ancient arts of Sith sorcery. During his time at the Academy, Scourge had discovered that there were many ways to draw upon the power of the Force. His natural talents had led him down the path of the warrior, learning to channel his emotions into strength and raw outbursts of lethal energy. But other students had trained with the Inquisitors, studying a very different curriculum. Millennia earlier, those who followed the dark side had learned to harness and shape the Force through complex rituals that could control the mind of an enemy and sometimes even warp reality itself. Much of this arcane knowledge had been lost, but those who managed to unlock even a few of the secrets of the past were often rewarded with a more subtle, though just as potent, form of power. It was rumored that the perpetual storms of Dromund Kaas were the result of the Emperor performing one of these rituals. Scourge didn't know if that was true, but he knew that Nyriss had gained her place in the Dark Council through her knowledge and understanding of things he could never hope to fully grasp. After several minutes, Nyriss pushed herself away from the desk, rose from her chair, and turned to face them, pulling back the hood of her cloak as she did so. Scourge was taken aback by her appearance, though he did his best to hide his reaction. Like him, she was a pure-blooded Sith, but her face was creased with deep wrinkles, and the tendrils dangling from her cheeks and chin were withered. Her skin was pale, more pink than red, and mottled with dark brown age spots. He didn't know how old Darth Nyriss was, though he knew she had served on the Dark Council for nearly 2 decades. Only 2 other members had longer tenures. Despite this, he had been expecting someone more akin to the fiercely beautiful woman depicted in the statues of the courtyard. Instead, he was confronted with a shriveled hag. Unbidden, the words of one of the instructors at the Academy leapt to the forefront of his mind. "The Force can be bent to your will, but often there is a cost. The most powerful rituals of the dark side exact a toll few are willing to pay." Perhaps Nyriss was not really as old as she appeared. A lifetime spent delving into the ancient secrets of Sith sorcery had given her one of the highest positions in the Empire. Maybe it had also drained her of her youth and vitality.
"Not what you expected,"
Nyriss said, as if reading his mind, a sly smile on her cracked and flaking lips. In contrast with her decrepit features, her voice was strong and vibrant, and she stood tall and straight. A sharp gleam in her eye further belied her venerability, leading Scourge to surmise that her appearance was intentional. There were a number of ways to stay young and beautiful. Nyriss could easily have afforded them had she wished to. Instead, she had chosen to let herself age prematurely. Either she didn't care about the superficiality of physical attractiveness, or she chose to flaunt the ravishing effects of the dark side as a symbol of all she had learned and accomplished.
"Forgive me, my lord," he said with a slight bow, employing the gender-neutral honorific used to address Sith lords of either sex. "There was an incident on my arrival that has left me a little off balance."
"I'm well aware of what transpired in the courtyard," Nyriss said, tilting her wizened head in the direction of the monitor. A still image of Scourge in the first few seconds after the battle was frozen on the screen, captured by one of the stronghold security cams.
"You dealt with the assassins quite efficiently."
Scourge hesitated a split second before replying. He wanted to speak with Nyriss about his suspicions, but both Murtaugh and Setchel were in the room. Even if they hadn't been, it was dangerous to throw out unfounded accusations implicating two of her highest-ranking followers without proof. They wouldn't have been in their current positions if she didn't have some level of trust in them.
"I expect this will not be the last such incident," he said, choosing his words carefully.
"It appears you're wounded,"
Nyriss remarked, noticing the scorch marks on the shoulder plating of his armor.
"Do you need medical attention?"
"It can wait. The injury is not serious, and the pain is irrelevant. I would rather finish our business here."
Nyriss nodded in approval.
"I would like to hear your analysis of the attack," she continued. "Perhaps we can learn something of who is behind it."
"That would have been easier if Murtaugh's troops had not killed the second assassin just as she was about to surrender," he replied.
From the corner of his eye, he saw Murtaugh bristle, but the security chief remained silent.
"You think Murtaugh made a mistake?"
Nyriss pressed.
"He was somewhat overzealous in his effort to eliminate an immediate threat,"
Scourge answered diplomatically. Setchel stifled a high-pitched giggle, and Nyriss shot him a stern glare.
"Let's continue this conversation in private,"
she said, dismissing Murtaugh and Setchel with a wave of her hand. The two quickly bowed and turned to the door, which had already been opened by the Twi'lek slave, who closed the door behind them before retreating to her corner.
"You have something you wish to tell me,"
Nyriss said once they were gone.
"Discretion and subtlety have their place, but not when you speak to me. I expect total candor."
Scourge nodded.
"Let me guess," she continued. "You suspect my own people are behind these recent attempts on my life."
"No one is above suspicion," Scourge admitted. "But I assume you have very thoroughly investigated everyone on your staff. If they were guilty, you probably would have discovered something by now."
"I'm glad to see you understand I am not completely incompetent."
"I do not believe the attack in the courtyard was another attempt on your life,"
Scourge said.
"I think the mercenaries were hired to eliminate me."
"And since Murtaugh sees you as a rival and potential threat, you naturally suspect he was behind it."
"Possibly. Or it may have been Setchel, or both working in concert."
"And what do you have to base this on?"
"Mostly circumstantial evidence, but my instincts feel there is enough to act on."
"Do you expect me to turn on two of my most trusted servants based on little more than your hunch?"
"My instincts are seldom wrong,"
Scourge said.
"My reputation is well earned."
"So what is it you suggest I do? Dismissal? Execution?"
Suddenly the conversation felt like a test, as if Nyriss was trying to evaluate him based on his answers. If so, he was ready for the challenge.
It would be foolish to throw away someone as valuable as either Murtagh or Setchel without concrete proof, Scourge replied. But I would like the chance to interrogate both of